Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets, the name, Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske File. We're continuing our Let's Watch Star Trek The Next Generation. We're up to episode 20 of season 1. This one's called Heart of Glory. For a quick synopsis, this is the episode where the crew rescue three Klingon from a damaged freighter in the neutral zone. Once aboard the ship, they befriend Lieutenant Worf and attempt to hijack the Enterprise so they can live as true Klingons, forcing Worf to choose between them or Starfleet. Let's see, what else do we have to talk about for this one? This was directed by Rob Bowman. Teleplay credit goes to Maurice Hurley, and the story credit goes to Herbert Wright and DC Fontana. This aired way back in March 21st, 1988. Today we're going to be joined by Clay, he's been here before, and we're going to get into this episode right after this.
We have heard this ship can separate in time of battle.
Yes, when relieved of its bulk, the Enterprise becomes an exceptional weapon.
Okay, welcome back. How's it going, everybody? I'm here with Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Wes?
Good. We just enjoyed Heart of Glory.
Did we ever.
The 20th episode of Star Trek The Next Generation's first season.
Are you burned out on these yet? You've done 20 of these?
Yes.
20 of the first season. 20 of, Star Trek,
20 of the first season. It's been an extended foreplay that has not been pleasurable all the time. It's like
playing a sport and just running drills the entire time.
Basically, yeah. I'm running suicides trying to get to the actual big game. I'll start off this. We'll play a little game here. How many days do you think the script was written in?
By which writer? There's like 15 writers on this one.
DC Fontana and Herbert Wright get the story credit, and they handed off their idea to Maurice Hurley, who co-wrote it with Rick Berman, who's the executive producer, who's not really a creative force on this.
I'm gonna say less than a week.
Script was written in 2 days, and it was still being written as they were shooting.
Wow.
So if you think about that, and you think about what happens in this episode, the plot of this episode is a very first draft of a script.
Yeah. I felt like it was... I actually thought it was pretty good. Like, that doesn't surprise me now that you say that, because the beats are pretty clearly mapped out.
Yep.
And it just sort of goes along the way you expect it to go along, with not really any surprises in there.
Yep. And I think one of the big things about how it's a first draft is that there's a lot of stuff that is like, you put in, you're like, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. And when you shoot it and you watch it, you're like, there's really no problem here. Like, I think I'll say that the first act of this episode might be the worst act of any Star Trek The Next Generation episode. Because
I think... it's my favorite first act that I've watched so far, because it's like literally 5 minutes of my favorite thing that my favorite thing in the show now, which is Captain Picard being fascinated and not understanding technology.
Yeah, no, this is a continuing theme. They're playing Picard and he is amazed by the most unamazing stuff that you could possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. In this one, it's Geordi vision, which we'll get to in a second. Because I just wanted to, first of all, just say you're doing a Prisoner podcast, which is a podcast about The Prisoner,
correct,
which I'm sort of helping with. And in the Prisoner podcast, the opening credits are essentially an episode. Like, you could have made an episode out of them. Mm-hmm. In this episode, it goes the other way. And the first act should have been the cold open. Before the credits, where you just beam onto the ship and you find these Klingons.
Right.
Instead, what we're forced to do is, the cold open is, you know, supposed to be dramatic, where they're warping towards the ship and they don't know what it is. Mm. And then it ends with them beaming over. And then the first act is Riker, Data, and Geordi over on this ship. And the entire first act is them walking through the ship until at the very end they find the Klingons. And to add something actually happening, they do this thing where Geordi is now hooked up through his visor, where other people can watch Geordi vision as he walks around and comment on how impressive it looks, even though it is clearly not impressive at all.
Right. It looks like a late 80s, early 90s teen public service announcement.
Yep.
It looks like it's kind of like Predator vision mixed with just a general fuzziness over everything.
Yeah, it's like what they add to videos in the early 90s to make it seem hip and cool.
Yes, yeah, right. It would be like you sort of slow down the frame rate to make things look a little like dreamy or something like that. And it's one big difference I noticed in the high def version, which we're watching on Amazon Prime right now. Mm-hmm. When he sees Riker, Picard sees Riker through Geordi's vision.
Right.
It actually looks like Riker in the high def version, which is a weird thing that the original fuzzy version of the show, if you watch it on Netflix, it legitimately does not look like Riker because the resolution is so bad.
Weird.
So it kind of does a weird disservice where the actual improved fidelity of the video makes you go, what the hell is Picard talking about? Yeah. That's clearly Riker.
Yeah.
And then he says, now I want to look at Data.
That's interesting because there are some other things in this episode where I thought the HD did not help. Namely, I don't think a lot of the Klingon makeup held up.
No.
It looks okay. It looks good. But it's like, and you get in close on those guys in HD and you can see the different colors in the makeup and the face.
Yeah, especially when they're white guys under the makeup, you can see around their eyes that there's clearly a white guy underneath. And that's why they cast so many black actors as the Klingons, just blends into their skin color.
The part where it stands out the most, I think, is not to jump too far ahead, but where when they have the first Klingon on the table who dies, they do that close up from like below his face, and you can really see some of the cracks and where his brow piece stops and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, because there's no reason to put a lot of effort into that guy because he's only got two minutes of screen time.
But arguably, he should have the most effort because you're doing a super close-up of his face. But
no, I'd agree. It's
go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, a random bit of trivia is, you know how this episode doesn't really do it. It's kind of weird, but in the original series, the Klingons are portrayed as like hyper-emotional, sort of ready to fight all the time. Hmm. They yell. Next Generation gets into that, too. The Klingons eventually just become sort of like, we're doing it for honor! And they all kind of like cheer, and they're like super amped up all the time.
Okay.
In this one, the Klingons are not. They're noticeably restrained. And the thing, the behind-the-scenes information, is that Worf's character was originally supposed to be one of those crazy Klingon types, where he was supposed to be like super emotional, always yelling about things he wanted to do. And the problem was that his makeup wouldn't hold up to emotional acting because they hadn't mastered it at that point. So they had to tame the character down just because the makeup was so stupid.
Wow, that's interesting.
And it's a totally different way to take the Worf character, which they sort of retconned in later as to why he's calm. But I thought it's an interesting... These Klingons are all very subdued.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I feel like, especially when you get into the scenes where Worf is talking to the other two Klingons and they're asking him about his background and stuff. It's the first time that, I never thought about him this way before, but it's the first time that Worf feels like, Spock. Like, he seems like he's the same kind of character as Spock, where he's
an outsider.
Yeah, he's an outsider, going against his people. But even in this one, it feels like his mannerism is very Spock-like too, where he's very, like you said, very subdued.
Yep.
I always thought Data was the Spock analog.
Yeah.
But, like you're saying, they change him up a little bit, but it seems like they split Spock in two and made Worf and Data.
That's true. I think that Worf eventually becomes more about, his struggles with the home world as opposed to his struggles versus the crew. Mm. This episode is really, until the last act, it really makes you sort of question Worf's loyalties to everything because he's doing a lot of stuff that I don't think would be really appreciated if the captain knew anything about what was going on.
Yeah, let's just say he gives these Klingons the benefit of the doubt where he probably shouldn't.
Yeah, and they're completely upfront with him about everything.
They right off the bat say, oh no, we killed everybody. We lied to your captain. Now, if you could show us how we can steal this ship, that would be great.
That'd be awesome. I'd like to take the tour. And speaking of that, might be one of the worst episodes for Picard to, draw a lot of, he doesn't do anything good. He's blown away by Geordi vision.
Right.
He seems suspicious of the Klingon story, but he doesn't care enough to not, interrogate them anymore. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're tired. We don't want to answer your questions. He goes, okay, that's fine. You can just leave. And then he puts Worf on them. And then at the end, he's blown away by the Klingon death ritual. And he can't really solve... Worf solves the problem.
Right.
Picard doesn't do anything.
Right.
Just kind of a strange tone for Picard.
Well, it's interesting. There's like a strange undercurrent of xenophobia a little bit in this episode where, I mean, Picard, when the first Klingon dies and they see the death ritual, there's that shot where Picard's like, I don't understand that. I mean, I can understand the closing of the eyes or whatever, but the yelling is just... And then later on, like... I don't know if this is something that's established or whatever, but Yar plays it very much like she is making assumptions based on the race of
the race of them. Yeah. And Picard even tells you, he's like, remember who you're dealing with. Here.
Right.
You're dealing with Klingon.
Right. So there's definitely, I mean, I feel like that's always been a Star Trek thing is that they don't trust Klingons. By the time you get to TNG, everything is kind of leveled off between the relations wise.
Right? Yeah, everything's kosher. Yeah. You'd think they. We can get into it later because I think the one big theme is actually how Klingon culture is represented in this episode, which I think the episode doesn't really nail, but it's kind of cool. Mm. But yeah, it's the Klingons are in alliance with Earth, but they do. It continues this first season thing, which I never really thought about until I started watching these episodes in order. It's a pretty. I'm not being overly dramatic, but it's a pretty racist show in terms of like every race is just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode actually tries to deal with that because it's saying that the Klingons are genetically a warrior culture. Like right. That's a thing. And the problem they're having is that they're forced into alliances now where they don't just kill people and how their society is sort of falling apart because of it.
Yeah.
Which they get into later on the show, which is actually kind of interesting, but it's the first time there's been a fallback to or blowback to just portraying a race as one thing over another.
The issue I had with the way that they play that in the story is Worf comes off very sympathetic to the Klingons that they capture. But I feel like he's still, even though he's sympathetic to their warrior nature and all that kind of stuff, and he understands why they're doing it, they still took over a ship and then blew up a ship of Klingons.
Yeah.
So like it's not just that they murdered other Klingons.
They did.
And yet even at
they
that
died
point,
well,
yeah, I guess by sneak attack, I guess.
And this
dying
the.
Well.
You'd think of the, not to interrupt, but you'd think of the 24th century, the tactic of pretending to be crippled until they lower your shields and then you shoot them. They do this in every other fight scene. This is like the go-to thing. Don't lower your shields until you either blow up the ship or it's so fucked up that they can't possibly come back at you. Because even he's like, I love the enthusiasm they put. They're like, we had ancient Mercury missiles, and we fired them at them, and they blew up, and this was wonderful.
Well, the prime directive is give everyone the benefit of the doubt.
Right? Yeah.
That's what it is. yes, but I found it strange that Worf would be so...
smitten?
Yeah, and just, like, he clearly... I don't want to say he picks his nature over his... job or something, but he's got like that response to what they did seems strange.
Yep. And I think to add on top of that, they don't mention his specific age, but it's heavily implied he's been with humans far longer than Klingons.
Yeah.
So his
also
they say he was taken. You know, he was at the Kittimer. This is the first mention of Kittimer, which becomes this famous event that Worf was the only survivor of, and he doesn't give an age, but he says something like it was before the age of ascension or
consent.
Something. Yeah, before the age of consent. And when the Klingons look at each other winking and go, wow, that's pretty young, fairly legal Klingon.
Like to come with us.
But
we have candy on our ship.
We have Klingon candy. It's probably the, what are those horrible hard candies that come from like Puerto Rico?
No, they're Necco wafers, is what they are.
Or the orange peanuts that you got, marshmallows. But they. They imply that it was very young when it happened. And it's not like he's been visiting back to Kling, as they call the planet in this episode, which
the
is horrific.
It's called Kling.
At the end, he goes, they are traitors of Kling. And they called, they, oh. Okay. There was a very short time they were called the planet Kling before they settled on Kronos, which is a much better Klingon name.
That's much better. That screams first draft.
Yeah.
What's the name of the planet? The Klingons. Just call it Kling.
Kling.
We'll change it later. We'll come with something better.
Spell it with a C, though, so it's not so obvious. Yeah, it's the Traitors of Kling, but I think it was really just because we're entering the weird realm now where the original series movies are still happening.
Right.
And because the last original series movie, I think, was in 91, which was mm-hmm. like the fourth or fifth, fourth season of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Oh, right, yep.
So they haven't settled, I think, and that's the one where they start saying Kronos quite frequently in that movie.
I also thought it was pretty hilarious that one Klingon gets in Worf's face and is like talking about all of the feelings he must have been having when he was growing up, basically treating him like a werewolf.
Yeah.
With, like, like in a werewolf movie when one werewolf talks to the young one and he's like, couldn't you, I bet you had that feeling of wanting to just go out in the moonlight and chase down a deer.
Or the blade. Dude, like, do you have the thirst?
Yeah,
do you have the thirst for battle? And they do a lot of insulting him and then just being like, I wasn't mocking you, Worf. I was just if you got angry.
I wasn't laughing at you. I was laughing near you.
You pussy. You gigantic pussy. Oh, and I did like they put a lot of effort into the Klingon food, which I appreciated.
Yes.
There's a lot of, the replicator made it well.
Worf does not eat.
No, he just kind of sits there with his fingers mashed together, staring at them because they're insulting his honor. Because, I guess just to break it down, these Klingons are upset with the way Klingon culture has gone, and they live for battle, and they want Worf to join them in this glorious battle world. And their thirst for battle is putting them at odds with the actual Klingon Empire this time, which is trying to track them down and execute them.
Right.
Probably because they killed a bunch of Klingons.
Now, yes.
Oh, now, yeah. Which makes sense.
They just wanted to bring them back before, but...
Yeah. And the Klingon commander, I forget their names. They all start with K, I think. Yeah. But I think his name's Kronos or... No, that's the planet. He's something like that. But the Von Alexander, I think, is that guy's name. I will double check that. Who eventually goes on to play a bunch of roles. Not in Next Generation, in Deep Space Nine, I think. He's actually really good in this. And I think he does better than the material... Especially at the end, because the script at the end where Worf and him face off is horrible. It's like Worf banging his chest saying, here is where honor and loyalty. Mm. It is atrocious.
Yeah, that guy definitely brings it at the end, though. I don't know if they put some extra makeup on his eyes or something, but his eyes look really red and like piercing. And he did a good job until Worf at the end is like, eat it, and then he, like, shoots him.
Yeah, it was, I think it should have been, Rob Bowman apparently was the one who wanted to do that whole sort of weird take of they're on that glass thing.
Right.
Originally, it was just going to be downstairs where that little the control panel is, and he wanted to do a more artistic thing, probably because the script is fucking appalling, so you have to get
Rob
some
Bowman
kind of...
Rob Bowman is a great director.
You have to get some, and I mentioned too, he did a lot of good shots in the... first act where it's sort of like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where the light is just, you're silhouetting the actors as they're looking at a bright light.
You mean the scene where Geordi and Riker both get cancer?
But
because they're standing up next to like an exploded warp core or something.
And this day is like, it's very hot, so I'll go first.
Yeah.
But that's what I was talking about. In the first act, there are literally no problem means anything. They get there.
Right.
They're like, it's too hot, we can't go through. Data goes... Okay, I'll go check.
Yeah, it's fine.
He's like, there's a door over there. You can come through. And
you
they
guys
go, okay.
Just walk fast.
They go right through.
Like a video game. If you walk through the fire real fast, it doesn't hurt you.
And then they beam them off. And it's like, there's too much interference. We can't beam them off. He goes, well, try it anyway. And it works. It's like, it's such a first draft script thing where you're not actually thinking of problems. You're just like, well, I'll put a problem here and I'll come back to this when I eventually figure it out.
The other interesting thing about that, as you were talking about the cold open, is... They do kind of like a smaller, more contained version of what the problems I had with the other episodes, where they totally name drop the Romulans.
Yep.
And then that just never has nothing to do with anything.
Nothing to do with anything.
It's
first mention. Yeah, just for clarity's sake, first mention of the Romulans in this series. They were in the original series, and this is the first time. Yeah, but it's right. Well, no, it can't be first mention because they were in was it Angel One? Where they were having the battle with the Romulans that we mentioned? We talked about how...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Again, I think they must not have just shown... They must not have shown up yet.
Right, they haven't shown them yet.
At least
okay.
They have been mentioned.
Yeah. They have been mentioned, and they continue to be mentioned. I don't know if they're trying to build them as the enemy that the series is desperately trying to get to, because the Ferengi failed. The Klingons are allies now, so you can't have them. And the Romulans have only been mentioned off screen, and they show up in the season finale of the Neutral Zone. And, well, the Borg would eventually supplant them.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, the other thing about what you're saying about the first act is, you really could have put... So at the end of the sequence on the freighter, right, there's a problem with the transporter, and they can't get them off the freighter, right?
Right.
But that only lasts for about 30 seconds, and then they get on, and everything's fine.
Captain, he has a phaser aimed directly at the dilithium crystal chamber. At that range, one blast and...
I understand, Lieutenant.
I think you could have done that whole episode on the freighter. So, if you think about it this way, the thing they set up when they go onto the freighter is that the hull is breached and the place is going to explode.
Right.
If you set everything that happens on the Enterprise on that freighter with the added element of there's a ticking clock because this freighter is going to explode.
Right.
I think it becomes a much more engaging episode.
Well, and it also makes more sense where Worf would... For Worf, it would be neither come with us or go back with them. Instead of, I'm going to blow up the ship, you should help me blow up this ship that we're both sitting on.
Yeah, because then you have this thing where it's, well, the Klingons want to try and get onto the Enterprise so they can steal the Enterprise or whatever. Instead of just being on the Enterprise and hanging out until they pick the lock with a credit card.
Well, no surprise, because in the intro, I read the wiki description of the episode is like a summary. And it says they try to hijack the Enterprise. I don't think I ever got the idea that they were trying to hijack the Enterprise. They were sort of marveling at it, but they weren't ever like...
I mean, yeah, I don't really know...
They had no out, is the problem.
Yeah, I think it's implied that at least up until the Klingon... Commander decides that he's going to blow up the warp core or whatever. I think it's implied that they're going to try and
separate the saucer.
Yeah, they want the battle bridge.
Yeah,
which is another thing that I love, because apparently separating the saucer is just something you do on a whim.
Yes,
because I mentioned in one of the other episodes I did, it blows my mind that they did that in the very first episode of the show. And in this episode, at the beginning, at the first sign of trouble, Riker's like, do you want to separate the battle bridge?
Maybe we should just
separate the saucer. And it's just like, calm down, dude.
Just relax. It's something they never... It was a good idea that just takes far too long and doesn't make any sense in context of...
Right.
Because the problem with separating the saucer is that you should legitimately do it for every single episode. Because there's always a threat to the ship. You know, there's no reason not to separate the thing and just have it go off. And so... Having it do it for battle, and although I need someone with like a physics background, they were saying that like once you remove the bulk of the Enterprise, it becomes more agile. But I'm like, well, there's no weight in space,
should it really matter at all?
So, yeah, it becomes a weird looking duck.
That actually brings up another question I've had, which is, I assume at some point they go back to Earth, right? They visit Earth
in the series,
Knowing what we know now about the theory of relativity and traveling faster than the speed of light, by the time they get back to Earth, with all the hyperspace speeding that they've been doing, it should be like 800 years in the future.
Yeah, they should be. Everyone else should just be dead. They should be like, is Admiral Smith still here? He's like, no, he died 17 years ago. Like, oh, it's all that warp
that's
travel.
That's my pitch for the next Star Trek series.
It's a prequel with the Enterprise theme song where they have to... The entire series is spent understanding how to age when you're traveling faster than the speed of light so that you're not excelling beyond what other people think. And, the other thing that I want to say is that if you had told me at this point that, spoilers, Natasha Yar is going to be gone...
Mm.
I'd be surprised, because I think this is the second or third non-Troy episode where she has no presence whatsoever.
Yeah, she's not even in the episode at all. I think, I don't know. I guess it was probably a personal decision
for
Yar to leave.
Yep.
But
I'm just saying it seems surprising because she's starting to get stuff. Like, she has stuff to do in this episode. Yeah. Her character is a cartoon.
Yeah. Well, I think she's got. I think that her character has enough of a jumping off point to make her equal with pretty much everybody else. I mean,
yep.
Yeah, Troy is definitely the weakest character on the show as far as the main ones that they've fleshed out.
Yep.
Because there's not really...
You're talking about in terms of this as of now?
Yes, as okay. of now. Yep. Yeah. Because there's not really... You know, like we've said before, her powers are slightly undefined and they never really use them to their potential. And
her role is undefined.
Yeah, her role is undefined. Every episode that's a Troy-centric episode is... At least for me, one of the ones that I do not watch.
Is horrific. Her mother is her mother's a top three worst Star Trek character.
Oh, that episode where her husband, oh Jesus. but Yar has at least the beginnings of something that could be interesting or jumping off point. Mm-hmm. You know, she can be summed up in the same sentence that you can sum up any other character on that show.
Yes.
You know, you could have the same one sentence breakdown for her. I don't mean same in content, but you could break her character down to a sentence the same way you could with Riker,
yep.
or even Worf.
It's still the series is still in the first season following the original series mold of they aren't characters, they're just roles.
Exactly.
And whatever role you need, you just plug that person into
exactly.
the thing.
Right.
That obviously eventually changes, but it is just Yar is the although this seems to be a prerequisite for security chiefs is you have to always give the wrong suggestion to whatever situation comes up. You have to give the wrong answer to it because she flips out at the hostage situation.
Oh, yeah.
She is constantly confused about what's going on. But, yeah, she's just the aggressive security chief who's always wrong. You know, Riker's the ladies' man who goes on the away missions. Mm-hmm. Data is the person who doesn't understand anything but gives you the information that you need somehow. He's a mix of information like that.
Right.
So it's true. I mean... They've got a long way to go before they land on their feet.
Yeah, as far as at the end when Worf is appealing to the Klingon general to send them to some... I like that he pulls out, like, I don't know if this planet he's thinking of exists, but he's like, send them to some, I don't know, war planet where everybody's fighting all the time.
It was the latest Predator movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, just send them there and we'll see what happens.
That's when Yar should have spoken up and been like, well, I come from like a rape planet. You could send them down there. There's a lot to do down there.
What's the Klingon take on rape? It's not really, intergender politics is not particularly discussed on the show, but you'd imagine. I mean, the Cardassians seem to have that eventually. The Cardassians is like Star Trek Next Generation introduced them. Deus Ex-9 fleshes them out, but they're the more dishonorable Klingon version, I guess, which is potentially more interesting because the Klingons are, just to sort of round up this is the first Worf episode.
Mm-hmm.
He had a previous episode where he had a scene with Wesley, which was like his first sort of thing besides just going like, yes, Captain, this is happening. And this one is the Worf story, introduces a ton of backstory. What'd you think of Worf's backstory?
That was all right. I was a little bit, you know, maybe this is where I'm confusing him with Spock in terms of the way that they played him. But I always thought his, or at least maybe I guess I would like it better if Worf's decision to go to Starfleet was a conscious decision made by a legit grew up on Kronos or Kling or whatever, Klingon.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I don't want to say it feels disingenuous, but it's like that decision means a lot more if it's coming from a Klingon on the home planet who has decided he is going to join Starfleet.
Yeah.
Than it does from basically Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
You know? So I think I would have liked it better if he had that element instead of being like an orphan that was, you know,
had no other option, raised
on a farming planet.
Raised on a farming planet.
Do they ever bring in his stepbrother?
Yep. Or half brother.
Half brother. There you go.
He is in the very last season in one of the worst episodes of the series. And his parents are Russian, which is funny as well.
Interesting.
I believe they're Russian. Russian or Polish, something like that.
Okay.
Worf's funny to me because we'll probably get into this more when the episodes start focusing on his, you know, the sins of the father storyline.
Mm,
mm. for a character they spend a lot of time on, he feels unfulfilled in some ways. Like, it's his storyline is so dramatic, and they put so many episodes that just focus on his storyline. I never feel like the Worf character is one of the top tier characters in the show.
Yeah, when I was going back and I was watching them through, the Worf episodes never really did it for me the way, like, they do that whole, are you getting into spoiler territory at all?
Yeah, it's
when they bring in, like, his kid.
Yep, the kid's bad.
Yeah, I was just like, I mean, I know what they're trying to do here, but it's not, it's just not really working for me.
Yep.
Like, I always thought Worf was, or at least I should say, given the backstory he has,
yep,
I feel like he should almost have some element that is rejecting Klingon culture. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, especially with the storylines that go on where the Klingon Empire is, like, they politically portray it as, like, dishonorable, basically, because there's a lot of backstabbing. It's very political. It's a political storyline. But he is whole hog into Klingon culture.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, whereas if he, you know, if he was a Klingon from the planet who decided to join Starfleet and then was made a pariah by his people because of it.
Right.
You know, and that maybe harbored some ill will towards, from him towards his people. You know, that kind of stuff I think would be really fascinating.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. He seems to be like all into the Klingon thing.
Right.
There's no element of that scene where he's being treated like a werewolf.
Yep.
You know, there's no element of, well, that's not who I am. I stand for this, this, and this. He's just like, no, you're right. I would love to kill a lot of people.
Yeah, you are. So that would be, I have experienced battle.
Yeah.
Well, it's a weird tie into the racism of it, where, because Worf is consistently throughout the series shown to be the best Klingon in the universe, you know? And it must be because he has humanity in him as, like, a large part, because he's been raised by humans since he was five or whatever it actually is. And so it's the weird thing where the Klingons are cartoons eventually, and he is the one who truly gets honor. Like, he's never backstabbing anyone, and everything he does that's dishonorable, he does it as a greater sense to, like, protect other people and things like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought about that.
But so
yeah, every Klingon who's not Worf is kind of, yeah, like you said, cartoonish.
Yeah, and a shithead. They're always, like, they're either betraying somebody or they're just doing a very political thing where they're politicians, basically. Yeah. They talk big about, like, Klingon culture, but they will, like, Duras will, you know, betray other people.
They all end up being, I forget what movie it is, but there's the movie with the villain as the two Klingon women.
Yeah, Generations.
Is that Generations?
Yep.
Yeah.
Where they blow up that Enterprise D.
Right, yeah. Where they're just, like, constantly bickering and, you know, yelling and backstabbing people, and it's like, oh, okay, that's...
Yeah, I forget what episodes they come in the series. They are in the Next Generation.
Oh,
they are. Cool. They are in episodes. I think it's the Sela, the Yar alternate storyline.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I mean, what'd you think of the episode overall?
You know, for a script that you say was written in 2 days, I thought it was okay. I thought it was pretty good. As a character episode, I think it works. I think it could have worked better.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would say it was pretty solid. There wasn't anything that really stood out as egregiously bad.
No, yeah, I think I agree. For how quickly it was thrown together, it's super by the beats, like what you mentioned earlier. There's really, it's saved somewhat by the Worf storyline, which I think slightly misses itself occasionally. Or misses the path that it's trying to walk down.
There's no B storyline in this at all.
No. There's not, which is weird.
Yeah, which is strange for the first season.
Yeah, and outside of the first act, I don't feel like it drags necessarily. I wouldn't say this episode is wall to wall, like, something going on, but it certainly is not one of the worst cases of pacing.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's, you know, they get right to the point more or less.
Yeah.
Yeah, and think they just allow things to, you know, unroll as they will, and it, wraps up pretty cleanly.
Yeah, it's, you have to give it that. It actually, it doesn't do the worst thing of Next Generation first season where the plot just resolves itself. Like the storyline was building towards this resolution that they actually arrive at, which is a positive.
My other favorite line, or at least line reading in this episode, is when the Klingon commander who, or general or whoever that comes in and wants to take the renegades back, Picard tells him that the guys have escaped, and the Klingon very, condescendingly says, well, these guys are trained Klingon assassins or killers.
Yep.
There's no dishonor in asking for help. And Patrick Stewart just kind of like breathes out and rolls his eyes slightly. He's like, I think we can handle it.
He does the lean forward in his chair, yeah. The aggressive lean forward. Although I think it would have been interesting if they actually had brought over some more Klingons to sort of deal with it.
Well, the other thing I was thinking is, I mean, thinking about the way that this stuff in real life plays out, the fact that these guys came to pick up these Klingons, right? And then Picard's like, yeah, they've escaped. We'll be right back. And then comes back and says, they're dead. And the guy on the other end is like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, just get rid of their bodies, it's fine. That would cause, like, an international incident.
Yeah.
Or, like, that would cause the breakdown of the entire alliance or something. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is the, I guess they chose the right race for this to happen. Like, the Klingons would just, and they kind of saved themselves by setting the, you know, earlier in the episode when the third Klingon just dies of his wounds. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, yeah, do whatever you want with the body. It doesn't matter at that point. Like, they've somewhat established the fact that they don't really care after someone dies. That it's just like, oh, well, I guess he either died well, which they did, that he claimed that they did, or they just are dead and dishonored or whatever. But it's an interesting foray into our Klingon, Klingon friends.
I thought when the first guy dies, when they take that piece off of his boot.
Yeah.
At first, I thought that was like Klingon dog tags.
Yes.
I didn't realize that was a piece to build that, you know,
and I had
in the line of fire style gun that they.
This is the second time I watched it in the past couple of days. And the first time I definitely thought it was the Borg do something similar. When a Borg dies, they take off like the pieces and then they just leave with the pieces. It's sort of like salvage stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
And the Klingons, I thought it was just a dog tag too. And it's weird. It's a spike on a boot, which seems strange. But also some real lax searching, you know, visitors who are under heavy suspicion of attacking and destroying another ship. They assemble. It's kind of stupid. Just assembling a gun out of various bits of your uniform. Right.
Yeah. No, it reminded me of the movie In the Line of Fire.
Yep.
John Malkovich builds that wooden gun that he can get through.
And you think, I mean, to get like super meta about it, you think the transporter would be like a body scanner at this point and be like, oh, this guy's got weapons. Like, cause I think there are episodes where they beam people over, but have them deactivate the phasers that they're carrying because they're threats or whatever.
Speaking of the phasers, I never realized how silly those look.
The handheld.
Yeah. They look like a dustbuster when you take the catching part off of the dustbuster.
It's just a little thing.
I never realized how. Do they change the design later?
They have phaser rifles eventually, which they use in First Contact.
Yes. I remember that, but I remember the phasers looking much sleeker than that.
Well, in this one, Riker has the small version, which is like a little tiny remote control. It's like smaller than, you know, it's like
maybe that's
basically
what I'm thinking
a little thing, which you'd imagine is all they need. I don't understand why it needs a, like, a holster that you have to
hold on
to.
Yeah, I don't know why Yar has, like, a giant flashlight.
It's something. So, yeah, from my thoughts, I think this episode's a 2 out of 5, is my rating. The backstory of Worf saves it.
Mm.
The script is a little rushed for my liking. I wouldn't necessarily say that this is an episode someone should watch. It's not offensively bad. I enjoy the way the Klingons are portrayed in it, and I enjoy the direction. So much more comes from what they were trying to do here, and it's not an episode that really grabs me.
Yeah,
and I always want to call it Code of Honor, but Code of Honor is the other episode. There must be 5 first season episodes that I want to call Code of Honor because it seems like it would fit the theme.
I can see now that I'm thinking about it, it makes sense that the staging of the final scene was something they did kind of on the fly,
mm-hmm.
or to just pump things up, because not only do they stage it on the second level, it ends with the Klingon falling through the floor.
Real flimsy flooring material, where you can just fall down and go through the glass floor.
Face first, through the floor, down to the bottom level. Just glass everywhere.
And an example of bad writing, where he falls in front of Picard and Yar, and Picard goes, "No." And then Worf just slowly walks down the thing and goes over, and it's like, why did Picard tell her no?
That might be a more racism on Picard's part. It's like, no, let that fucker die.
Just beam his corpse out of here, Geordi. Get him out.
So, sorry, just one more thing.
Sure.
Does Worf not know the death ritual when they do it the first time?
Well, that's the other... episode, like we were talking before, Worf has a lot of Klingon knowledge about things that... Data says Federation people have never seen this, which seems strange.
Yeah.
Seeing that you've been in a war with Klingons, you'd figure you'd know how they treat their dead. And then, so, if the Federation doesn't know about it, how does Worf know what to do?
Right. Well, see, that's why I asked, because the first time they do it, the two guys from the ship do it.
He's the last one.
And he's kind of like, hesitant. Yep. Not hesitant, but he does it. After they
he
stop.
Mimics them, obviously.
Yes, he kind of looks like he's just doing what they're doing.
Yeah,
but then he does it at the end and seems to have got it down pat by the end.
I can't tell if I love or hate the cuts that just the angle gets further and further out.
Yeah,
and so our final thoughts. What do you the Klingon death yell? Cheesy or good? On a scale of cheesy, where one is cheesy and 10 is fantastic, where would you put it?
I would put it at a 5.
I'd put it at a 4. I think it's just hitting cheesy area.
I'd put it at a 5 because I think it's very situational. I think there are places you could do that where it would be great.
Right. It's all about shooting it, is the thing. Like, if you don't shoot it dramatically, it's like, ooh, that's a little bit silly.
Well, and also, depending on who the person... I mean, if your scene is... Like,
guy falling to the floor.
No, if your scene is like, the triage unit on a Klingon warship.
Right.
Where everybody's dying and there's like one chaplain going to each gun and go, rah! down the line.
It would have been great in there's an episode, I think, of the second season where Riker is an exchange officer with the Klingon ship. A Klingon comes from the Klingon ship and serves on the Enterprise and Riker goes over to the thing.
Yeah.
The Klingon ship. It would have been great if he was just like, can we just fucking stop yelling? Like, everyone just calm down. he's just trying to like type something into a pad and people are screaming around him. He's just like,
well, you know where it would have gone from a 5 to a 10? Is if they had, at some point in the show or in the movies, if they had killed off Worf.
Yes, and Riker.
And Riker does it. That would have been awesome.
Great. It would have been great. Yeah. I don't think they ever do it again. But whatever. Yeah, so let's wrap this up with some criticism from real TV critics, and we can sound off on our opinion here. Reviewers rewatched the episode at the end of the series. Keith DeCandido reviewed the episode for Tor.com in 2011. He's a novelist who has produced works based in the Star Trek universe and describes himself as the Klingon guy as far as Star Trek novelists are concerned. He was not overly pleased with the episode, describing the plot as being slow, and he said that Michael Dorn's acting skills at this point were mediocre, but would get much, much better later in the series. He praised David Frohman as Kanera, I think is the second Klingon, not the captain, describing him as having tremendous presence, and thought that although Von Armstrong was excellent as Admiral Forrest in Enterprise, in this early episode he was overly histrionic. I kind of disagree with that. I didn't think he was that bad.
Is he talking about...
I believe he is the captain. Let me zoom here. Von Armstrong. Commander Kanera. David Frohman. Oh, that's the guy on the ship. Chorus is the guy that they got at the end, right? Let me see here. Yes, it is. So that's Von Armstrong.
Wes, are you implying that all Klingons look the same?
And they all have K names for some stupid reason, except for Worf, who has a W.
I do agree with his comment on Michael Dorn's acting.
Yep.
I think that's another thing that makes me think of Spock, is he's very... He, like you said, he doesn't have much...
Range.
Emotional
range.
Yes. Like, it's this episode is light years away from... the greatest thing to ever happen with Worf, which is, if you were any other man, I would kill you where you stand.
It is, yeah. That's probably the peak of his character as a character. It's because it's like the perfect melding of what the show is trying to make him, mm-hmm. you know, the human Klingon.
Right.
Someone so driven to violence, but has the human thing of... Because Klingons, I think, would just kill each other, you mm-hmm. know, over the slightest slight. Yeah. Like, yeah. And this is the human thing coming through. So,
can we from moving on, like moving forward, mm-hmm. every time we get to a bad one, can we just watch First Contact?
We'll talk about 10 minutes of each First Contact thing. He described the overhead shot of Worf after the death of Koris as just silly and thought that the episode was overall a forgettable mess. He gave it a 4 out of 10. Mm. Zach Hanlon, writing for the AV Club, thought that the first act of Heart of Glory was slow, but improved after that and said, well, it's not exactly a tearjerker. It does give Worf the dignity the character needs to work. He had mixed feelings about the Klingon death ritual, but felt it was justified at the end of the episode due to the complex nature of the character of Kronos. Trek Nation described it as one of her favorite episodes from the first season. I thought it laid the groundwork for later episodes. Felt that the drama seemed artificial and the writers forced a situation where Worf had to kill one of the Klingons as if to justify the brutality as necessary for the good of Starfleet. It seems a little deep.
Yeah.
Highfalutin for me.
I don't know about that.
Jammer's reviews thought the drama with Worf deciding whether or not to join the Klingons was problematic. He thought it was hard to believe that the crew seemed to know Worf as little as they did at this point in the series, but praised it for being the starting point for all future Klingon-based stories in the franchise. And that's it.
Yeah, that last bit, I could see that. Yeah, I understand that. They play him in this episode kind of like they don't know him very well.
Yeah.
Which, I'm surprised they didn't play him like that all the time.
Well, I think that ties more into the fact that the crew in these early season things just seems incompetent when the plot requires that they become idiots, basically. Which, so them seeming stupid makes it seem like they don't understand Worf and the Klingons.
Yeah.
When it's really just the only way this plot can get going is if Picard's like, all right, I'll see you guys later. It's nice to have you on board.
I'm actually surprised now that I'm thinking about it that they didn't play him more as a wild card. Because I always find those characters to be very interesting. The ones where you can... the example that I use all the time for this is... do you remember the Beast Wars Transformers cartoon?
Absolutely.
How you had your Autobots, but then the one guy who also was on that team was the Raptor bot,
right?
Who was a bad guy,
right?
Who joined the Autobot team, right?
Yeah.
He was a good guy from that point on, but he was also a wild card because you never knew which way he was going to fall in terms of any, you know, good guy, bad guy situation.
Yep.
And that even if every single time he chooses good guys, the fact that he might not makes it that much more interesting.
Yeah.
And with a character like Worf, who is a Klingon, which is a race that there's a big, you know, a long history of violence between the two of them, it would make sense if they didn't
trust him
100%. Yeah, or at least always kind of, you know, had their hand by their gun just in case, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's a recurring theme because they also do it with Data. They're like shocked to learn things about Data. It's like he's been around for a long time. Yeah, I feel like people should know stuff about him. And I don't know if I agree, but I definitely think if the show is not as unserialized as it is, that would be the way you take the Worf
character.
Although
I guess doesn't McCoy kind of do that with Spock in the original? Because I was just thinking instead of everybody being constantly questioning of Worf. It could have been Yar. I mean, Yar seems to be that way anyway. Like, if she was kind of always on edge around him, that would be kind of interesting.
Well, it's funny because in the second season, Crusher is gone and Pulaski takes her place. Mm-hmm. And Pulaski is essentially a clone of the McCoy character.
Yeah, yeah.
But caused a lot of fan outrage because when you watch the episode, she is just a huge dick to Data. To the point where it's, like, distracting. You know, it's like, why? What's her problem with this guy? Like, and it doesn't make sense as this show, as Roddenberry tried to, you know, everyone gets along, kumbaya, everyone's happy. When you introduce the one dick character, which McCoy did effectively in the first series, because everything was very loosey-goosey in the original series, and it comes off as odd that people would put up with her. Who'd have thought? But anyway, thank you guys for listening to this episode. Thank you, Clay, for coming by.
Anytime.
And Just a little housekeeping before the end. If you enjoyed the content today, I much appreciate a like or comment on YouTube. If you're listening on iTunes, it's much appreciated. If you could leave a rating. I know rating stuff on iTunes sucks and all that jazz, but it does help me in the rankings, and I'm moving up slowly but surely. I think I'm in the fifth column of Star Trek podcasts if you search. So if you expand the window, maybe it shoots up to three. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. Thank you for leaving feedback and all that jazz. And thank you, Clay. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Well, as you mentioned before, I have a podcast about the British sci-fi classic The Prisoner, which you are kind enough to co-host with me. If you're interested in that, you can follow us on Twitter at Prisoner Podcast. Or the website is undefined at the moment.
It'll be in the show notes.
I might change it up. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, check out that. Check out the Twitter. Check out that podcast. We're enjoying it. And thank you guys, and we will see you next time.
See you.